This is Corolla Digital.
Hi, I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And this week, on This Week with Larry Miller, I will tell you about My Fair Lady, one of the greatest movies ever made, and I'll tell you why it's great and why it's great to fall in love. Listen for free through iTunes or go to LarryMillerPodcast.com. We'll see you here.
Now, it's time for this week's CarCast with your host, Adam Carolla, and moderator, Matt DeAndrea.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. Welcome to yet another CarCast. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea.
Hello.
Scott Whitaker's here.
He's
the owner of Dynamat. Dynamat and, well, it's a dynamic control of, well,
I just
what
think
is
it
official?
All,
I just think it's all Dynamat.
It's kind of like Procter & Gamble and, Ivory Soap. So they never talk about Procter & Gamble. So we everybody refers to us as Dynamat as opposed to the company name Dynamic Control.
And it does the, well, we have it. There's many different applications. Anyone who builds cars or sees any of the shows where they build the cars, it's now a part of building cars and hot rods and restoration and that kind of stuff. But there's also an application, for instance, our compressor room is covered with Dynamat. That's called Dynamat, one of the many products.
Yeah.
There's a couple of our products in there. We sell for architectural and home theater, studio rooms to try to keep the noise on one side of the wall, basically.
Sound deadening. For us, there's a big, I don't know, three-phase, 50-gallon compressor in there that just makes a ton of noise when it fires up, and now it doesn't because we got the Dynamat or the product that Dynamic Control makes.
Right. I generically call them all Dynamat, although when you go through the list, you have the individual ones.
In the car world, I seem to see it on the firewall and then coming down the firewall around the transmission tunnel and things like that. I don't seem to see it in the fender wells. Is it? It's not a fender. Where would you? What is the hot rod application?
Well, there's two uses for it actually. To reduce noise, and then it does reduce a certain amount of heat. Dynamat Extreme, the damping material.
It has like a radiant barrier kind of a quality to it.
Well, it has an aluminum a layer on it, but it's actually called a constrained layer for damping, what Dynamat does there is it actually converts vibration energy, the dynamic motion, into low-grade heat, which means it makes less than a degree. But what it does is it dissipates all that vibration, which causes noise.
Right.
And converts it, so therefore, you have a quiet, solid car. So, and the other thing, it does reduce transfer of heat through that panel. So that what that means is usually everybody puts it on the floor and the firewall, which is the biggest, culprits when it comes to heat and noise, because the floor of the car transfers vibration to every part of the car. Now, the more you put on, the better it works. So a guy doing a high-end car or a car that a guy wants to make really, really quiet, he literally covers all the interior sheet metal, the top, the bottom. The first two things I tell everybody to do is do the doors, and then the next thing that I do on everything is I do the tops because we have some hard rains and such in the Midwest. And when you're driving down the highway and it's raining like crazy, you can't even hear yourself and when it's pelting the roof. So, but every part of the car, the sheet metal makes noise.
The concept of sound reduction, I know a little bit from building this studio that, putting a double wall is good. If you really want to take it, then there's the whole part where you sort of acoustics. Boy, I tell you, it's insane. I used to do when I used to do Howard Stern all the time. I had something called a Zephyr, and it's a thing you plug into a phone line, and you can broadcast. And they give you a microphone, headphones, just like we have it now. Zephyr's the size of a small suitcase. You plug it in, you punch in a number, and run it to a whatever line. And I would sit in my office and do his show for 5 hours from my office in my house. And this office had walls and hardwood floors and some cabinetry, and it sounded like complete and utter hell. But if I took sheets, just bed sheets, and hung them up off the ceiling fan and made a little surround for me, and just literally I would take the sheets and take squeeze clamps like from my woodworking garage and just hang them over the hard surfaces of the cabinets, just drape them over the top and squeeze clamp them to the crown at the top of the thing, and just go around the room. Totally and utterly different sonic experience. Right. And one time, because I had to do it at 3 a.m. our time, 6 a.m. New York time, and I did Loveline. I come home at 12:30 at night. I just got up, and I hadn't hung the sheets up, and I just got on the thing, and I said two words, and he went like, "Where are you calling from, man?" It's a completely and utterly different experience from merely hanging a few sheets up around where I was. Not even a professional grade anything. But I know from doing this studio, there's a part where you transfer sound, and they say the best way to truly do a studio is to cut that slab and create an expansion joint in that will not attach whatever's going on the outside to whatever's going on the inside. I stop short of that, but
it's you're decoupling the slab that way. So there's several techniques. You know, you can put up a barrier wall to do so much there. You can decouple whenever you like. When you building the two walls is similar to when you're cutting that slab. You're stopping the transfer from traveling through solid objects. So when you're talking about acoustics, you've got airborne acoustics or in-room acoustics, where when you hung the sheet on the fan, which is, you know, genius, really.
Thank you.
Unless the kids turn the fan on.
I'm all about bang for the buck.
They,
you know,
so they didn't exist.
You created your zone of, what do they call it, the cone of silence?
Yeah, right? Get smart. Right.
So you got your cone of silence there.
No, but literally did, because the fan blades spread out about 4 or 5 feet in all directions. Yeah. I took the squeeze clamps and made myself a little mini shower inside just by draping them all around me, and then I just sat in the middle. It was dark outside. It was 3 a.m.
Like the Karate Kid, Halloween costume.
And, that's right.
So you
exactly.
you really took the shortcut where guys spend several tens of thousands of dollars to create a little acoustic room to do something in, and you just
didn't have much choice. But that is part of the equation, and It's something that the sound and the dampening and the deadening was something that just never existed in the past. You take a hot rod, the first thing you do is gut it.
Yeah.
And you take out all of the panels and all the insulation
and there's
all
no
the stuff.
Decoupling of there's you can't do that in the car really. There's no
It's all
it's just
one
sheet metal. It's just one layer
monolithic
big metal
items.
Box. Right. Yeah. It's like riding in a mailbox, you know what I mean?
So the worst condition for sound, and then you have 600 horsepower engine, which might have some open headers in front of you. So it's going to be that.
I don't think any amount of dynamite.
Yeah, stiff suspension is one of the worst things for road noise. You know, we go with lower profile tires, stiff suspension, open exhaust, maybe even open intakes. It just all gets worse and worse and worse.
Now, do you have any exterior products, like Adam was saying, like in a fender well? Or on the bottom of the floorboard, or everything's mostly inside the car?
Well, you can use like our Dynaliner in fender wells, but a lot of guys will do all that treatment from the inside of the car.
Yeah.
Is there anything you do that's a brush-on, spray-on, liquid form?
No. For years, we did a product called DynaShield, and there is no spray material or spread-on material that does the damping or the insulation as well as Dynamat sheet products do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what I'm thinking is there's no way you're going to, you know, it's like saying how much, you know, you're not going to get the R value out of an inch of solid insulation versus, you know, R36 or something like that. But it helps a little bit, like, as you know, used in conjunction with, you know, you spray on or
like you could
roll on.
I imagine you can use, like, some just bed liner
Well, you know, actually, bedliner's not very good at sound deadening. That's right. Why they've never been successful. They've tried to market it
just for durability in a fender well, but then you use your sound deadening material on the inside,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And is the material, it comes in, pardon me, because I've only seen it on the cars, but I've not applied it myself. Because most of the stuff I work on is race cars, where it's like, you put earplugs in, it's sort of academic what it sounds like inside. And it's so loud you can't even hear yourself think anyway. So it's like I said, academic. But is the stuff coming in sheets? Is the stuff coming in rolls? Is it have an adhesive back? Are we putting
it's all peel and
down?
Stick. It's actually a form of butyl rubber that mm-hmm. the Dynamat is base material. So it has its own adhesive. It is its own adhesive.
And we'll cut it out to the shape we need it?
Yeah. Well, you can do – we do – it comes in several different packages. So you can get a one sheet rolled up, or there's larger packs that it's just kind of folded over. Other packs that are – the sheets are not folded or – rolled or whatever. It's and then so it was the number of different packaging. And,
but I'm imagining the future you'll have a kit for a 71 Chevelle?
We have it now. We actually have custom cut kits for most of the cars that people are restoring in terms of America cars. Corvettes, Camaros, you know, Firebirds, Chevelles, some Impalas. We've got most of the, you know, like 60, 70 Mopar stuff. So we have a pretty wide range. Currently, we have just finished up doing 356 Porsche, early 911, later 911.
Wow, going European. I like
that. Well, European, what started me in the whole car thing. I've been a long time BMW owner. I redid it. Mm. What got me started in this is I had a 68 2002 BMW. And it, you know, like
TI or just
no. Huh. I have a couple TIs right.
Okay.
TIIs right now.
Moving on.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, maybe we should just go out and see what you brought us. I like that. Is it because I like the German stuff and the Italian stuff, and I like the Japanese stuff, you know. And it's if I brought that up, and everything is like, hey, if you're a Mopar head like me, and it's like I'm not a Mopar head like you. I like the 911 a lot.
Yeah.
It's a great platform to jump off on. And I like the BMW, and I especially like the 3.0s and the 3.5s.
I got a 2800.
I like those, too.
So, it's the body. The same body.
Same body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just poor man's 3.0.
So you were redoing that 2002.
Yeah. Actually, I dipped that car because it was like – it was 2 years old. It was rusty,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it Cincinnati winters, and you know the salt had just done some major damage to this car, so I had it dipped because there was a guy in town that, you know, not too many people do that anymore because of the EPA issues and mm-hmm. such, but so this car was dipped, but I put new deck lid, new doors. I had almost the whole new clip on the front.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I even started, but you know,
right.
it's you know, if you don't have any money and you know, just do with what you can. And all in a good car community there with guys that most of the people helped me with that were my friends.
Mm-hmm.
But that's – I put this car together, and it was, you know, back then, what did we do? Like, you know, one over plus one tires and wheels, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, now we do, what, 24-inch wheels or something, you know. But so
– yeah, the thing came with 13s. You're going to
put 14s. Yeah, you put 14s, and you were hot stuff,
right,
you know.
Right.
So
I'm going with a 60 series.
Yeah, baby.
This
right.
So
wow.
lower profile tires, stiff suspension. I did, you know, I put headers on it in a what was it, ANSA exhaust, you know.
You put header on it.
Yeah.
It came in a two-pack, which was weird. We just used the one.
So the car looked really – I love the way the car looked. I did a little, you know, stripping down on it. But that car had about a quarter inch of molten asphalt poured in the floors from the factory. So that mm-hmm. stuff was all popping loose, mm-hmm. scraped it all out. So everything I did made it louder, really, mm-hmm. from original.
Right.
And so it looked great, ran great, but I'm going down the road, maiden voyage, and I'm, you know, it's like, man, this car feels like an old car, and it looks so good, and it runs so good. And it dawned on me, really, it's like that kind of formulated a philosophy there. Nobody talked about how bad competition cars, hot rods, mm-hmm. you know, high-performance cars felt
mm-hmm.
or you know, whether it's heat, vibration, noise. So I started just playing with it all on my own to do my own cars because I wasn't happy with the car. So, mm-hmm.
And what was your background?
Well, multiple things. Machinery design. At that time, machinery design, mechanic. I built chemical process equipment, you know, a lot of alloy, exotic alloy welding and so on. But sometime after that, back in the later 70s then, I became a marketing product manager guy for an English company. And so it kind of everything combined. My experience is really varied.
And this product didn't – what year are we talking about here?
Well, I started using – experimenting with different things back then, you know, on this 68 BMW. But when I finally –
But the year you were doing
when I finally had something and started this business was in 89.
So 89.
This is like our 25th anniversary.
Was it something that you experimented with and created, or you just came up with these ideas and found a company and you said, try this? You sort of a chemical company or something like that.
I found a company that – and I talked to like dozens of people trying to – get through it, because most of what people were using in vehicles or for any kind of sheet metal sound damping was a stiff, thick, heavy piece of asphalt that they put some adhesive on, peel and stick, you know, kind of thing, or bake it on.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
the, like OE Automotive, they would throw something on the floor and it'd melt in the bake oven, you know, when they bake the paint.
It sounded like they were trying to make the metal stiffer instead of trying to
and they
absorb
were, they were doing
the
both
sound.
Making it stiffer and adding mass, which basically just lowers the resonant frequency. So if you find that resonant frequency on something, then it's still making noise and you're adding a lot of weight and so on. And like I said, the damping is actually an energy conversion. The physics term of damping is also, they use the word hysteresis. It's an energy conversion.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, I bet you were.
Yeah.
I went to high school with a black chick named resonant frequency is a really bizarre thing. And I don't know if it was the Verrazano Bridge. What was the bridge that blew itself out?
Yeah.
I
forget the name. I actually have a video of that.
It was in, I don't know if it was in Portland or somewhere around.
The suspension bridge.
That area. It wasn't the wind that took that bridge down, that suspension bridge. It was the frequency.
Yeah, it was resonance. A fat guy walking across.
Which is a bizarre
And in fact,
thing.
They got that on video even. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Here's the video here.
You see, I don't know, this is, you know, 1951 or whatever it is.
Tacoma Narrows Bridge.
Tacoma. Well, I had that part close to right. You had the whole bridge just freaking out, and there was wind to create the frequency, but not – the wind was not blowing this thing.
You can't
up
blow
and
the
down.
Wind that hard.
No, that would be – Well past hurricane force.
That's a crazy amount of movement.
You'd have to, if you were standing there watching that, you'd have to think the end is near. Like that's a phenomenon that just you can't comprehend.
The flip side is it looks like it's fun as shit. Like if it wasn't so dangerous, you'd want to run across it or something.
It ended up coming down, right? And now I guess when you design a bridge, you have to figure this into the equation.
Yep, totally.
And I don't know how you've – I mean, obviously, it's the shape and the positioning and things. Like, it must not take that much to – you don't see it in the bridge. Not like there's big pilasters for this problem, but they must factor it in. And I guess they didn't factor this one in.
You know, you watch the video. How does the asphalt flex that much? I mean, you don't think – you think it would just snap all apart, but maybe it's more pliable than
– Well, asphalt is fairly, you know – in that reference is flexible.
So how what is the phenomenon we're looking at here with what looks like, if you're not watching it, it's like if the Golden Gate Bridge just started spazzing out, just jumping up and down, like having a seizure. That's what it looks like. But what's the phenomenon, Scott?
He's like, they didn't have dynamite on that damn thing.
Yeah. The Well, the interesting thing about that, I think that was is a combination. This resonance that got started when it combined with that design because of the flexibility built into the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
That it's kind of like you have some elasticity there, so it's kind of like was going like this with the way the cables run.
Right, guy ran across it, which I loved. To go get the dog out of the car.
Where's your car?
He left his wife in the car though.
Holy moly! But so you've got a couple of things into play there because I don't know of too many situations where you can start a resonant frequency that will continue or grow or, you know, like cause itself to continue like that. You know, like we could power a car with it if we could contain it.
Yeah. But like,
but I think it's a combination of the elasticity of those cables. That's like you stretch a rubber band, it's got to come back. So then it would like keep, it was rebounding, you know?
Right.
If you have,
but obviously when you build an airplane, you have to factor that in.
Oh, absolutely.
And everything. But it's a weird dynamic in that something can power itself, so to speak, without having a power source,
right?
In a sense, which is a crazy dynamic. And you're right; we could run a car or all the lights in the city if we could figure out how to harness that.
Pull the rope and let it roll.
That
bridge must be like it has to start at one end, and then when it gets to the other end. It comes back almost like water hitting a wall and coming back, or the ocean going in and out.
Just,
because it seems like why would it? It would just end and then bleed off, but it somehow it's coming back and forth for a while. It's pretty nuts to see for sure.
Well, anyway, I don't know why.
Well, that was
brought up that term.
That was a nice aside.
I agree. I haven't seen that footage in quite some time.
We don't get to talk about things like that every day.
And was that like 1951 or something, or did it just look like 1951?
Yeah, look at that guy's car and his awesome jacket.
Yeah. The thing that was funny.
1940.
Oh.
Yeah, bridges sucked back then.
I saw Steel Dawn with Patrick Swayze in it the other night.
Oh, actually, I saw you tweeting about it. You must have been having a good time or drinking Mangria.
I had a little Mangria, but I was watching it. But it's like, this is world, it's the post-apocalyptic, you know, United States after World War III. Except for everyone's hair looked like 1987. They never factor that part in. Even in Elvis.
Swaz had good 80s hair. Though.
In Elvis movies from the 50s, he would have pomade on and he'd get in a fight. He'd be an old Western gunslinger, but he had the same 1950s hair.
Yeah.
Even when we got to the 80s, no one ever did that math. Like, maybe their hair is not going to be exactly like 1987, even though we're shooting the movie in 87, because this will be after World War III. And somehow we didn't have anything but desert. No water and wind power.
There's a picture of the
and we all look like
mullet.
But everything looked like it was from a Pat Benatar video from 1986. Why would that be? It would be a crazy coincidence that 200 years in the future, everyone would have the same hair that they do when we're shooting the film. Right? Look at this chick's. You got to see the chick's hair. I was like, this is Pat Benatar's hair. Like that's 19. This isn't now. This is after World War III. We don't even know when World War III is coming around.
When this movie came out, did they think World War III was going to be like 2009 or 2010? Or
well, they shot the movie in 86.
Yeah.
Their only excuse is that we shot the movie in 86. World War III started and ended by 87. And then this took place in later 87. That would be their only excuse because everyone's hair and it was basically right out of Thunderdome. Everybody, again, her hair is from Pat Benatar's hair. All right. Anyway.
Well, I guess they have to hire somebody to predict the technology that will be going on in that year and the hairstyles.
I figured it out. There's no denim, but there's tons of leather.
Yes.
And I would argue that with no water and no life, we would have a shortage on leather. We'd probably have more denim than leather. There's never a cow. There's never a cow in the future. No one goes, hey, you want a porterhouse?
Right.
Like, there's no water. They live in the desert. Where's all the leather coming from?
It would just be denim. Leno would be the king of that time.
Well, I'm not saying it would all be denim. Yes, we would hail. He would rule. He would
all Neil Toledo in his denim.
Yeah, he'd be like the guy from Road Warrior. He'd be in one of his Stanley steamers.
With the nitrous tank, though.
With the nitrous on it, and he'd be wearing denim, and he'd be talking like Gigantor into a bullhorn.
Into the mask. He'd wear the mask. He'd have, like, some weird naked guy taped to the front of his car.
That's Leno. You know Leno. Speaking of Leno, you must go over to his shop and give him some of the Dynamat. He probably puts that into everything he builds, right?
Actually, they're pretty good about buying it, you know. It's... I love his quote. He puts on double layers. Mm-hmm. So if one layer's good, two layers better.
Well, what he does is Dynamat, layer of denim, and Dynamat, and then Stonewash. He finishes it off with Stonewash.
I could do a special
run of denim Dynamat.
There you go.
And the Leno.
There you go.
Oh my God, he would
love
that.
I don't. You know, call me crazy, but I do believe Jeep came out with a Levi.
Yeah.
Had a Levi interior. I think the Gremlin, had a Levi. I think AMC, Jeep AMC, had a couple of cars, like a Gremlin and stuff, with a Levi. Nothing sounds less comfortable to me than a Levi interior. But
who knows?
As long as you're not sitting on a rivet. You know?
Right. And like a pocket with a patch on it. But those cars, you got a little homework now, Jeff. I'll bet you the Levi version of the Gremlin. But those things, by the way, somebody...
Oh, I didn't know it had the emblem on the fender and everything. It was actually Levi.
I would have loved...
Come on, Barrett Jackson, let's see this
thing. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall and the meeting, like AMC, when we're sitting around and they're like, Toyota, Honda, Datsun, they're kicking our ass.
Yeah.
They're fucking eating our lunch for us, people. What are we going to do to turn this ship around? And then one guy's hand went up.
I've got it. This is it.
All right. Bob, I know. Lighter, more fuel economy. Beat them at their own game. No. Denim. The interior.
I just want to see him pull the sheet off of his little clay model of the Gremlin. Behold, the Gremlin.
And then who, by the way, in that meeting went, all right, get this guy a raise in his own parking spot. That's right.
Yes. Everything you're doing, yes.
Forget about fuel economy. Forget about drag coefficiency. Forget about overhead cam motors. We're going denim, people. That's the future of this company.
We need to get Levi in on this right now.
We'll do a cross promotion with Levi. We'll pay them a bunch of money and put their emblem on the fender because nothing says automotive performance like cotton-based materials. And look out, Honda.
I'm digging it.
Datsun, Toyota, pack it up, headed on back to Japan. We got a car with jeans inside of it.
I heard it almost took down Toyota as a whole.
Oh, it was this close.
With seats of the pants.
Yeah.
Levi. Okay, now, what year is this? And let me ask you this. Would you want Obama bailing these imbeciles out? Isn't this how it works? The weak and the retarded die off and we move on? You know what I'm saying? Like, would we need the person with the horrible ideas still in business because we artificially subsidize them? Or shouldn't the guys with the horrible ideas go away?
I love this ad. The first line says, we've strengthened the bumpers to withstand a 5-mile-per-hour impact. That's the first line. That's the lead-in.
What they never told you is the car wouldn't go faster than 5 miles an hour.
They had to do that because it was the law. That's the 73, 74, 75 is when everything came, the 5-mile-an-hour bumpers and 10-mile-an-hour
bumpers. So 73 is where the Levi.
Yeah.
The big gas crunch was either right in the 74, 72, right in the middle of it, or it was really coming, the embargo and so on and so forth. Honda had just made some inroads, and Toyota was making inroads, and Datsun had, made inroads, smaller, lighter, more fuel-efficient cars. But don't worry. We're putting jeans inside our cars, people.
I'm just going to predict right now that Gremlin is going to be the next pro touring movement. Autocross of the Gremlin.
I will tell you this now, a super clean Pacer or Gremlin with some Levi's on the interior is probably going to be worth something.
Well, after Levi's, though, you remember the Audi TT did the baseball glove interior, and they used the big, thick
Rawlings or whatever.
I don't know if they even branded it with but they had the big stitch.
Which was cool,
and that leather
they did
strap
like you know
that was kind of cool.
Done
like
the Eddie Bauer Explorer and things like that. I mean that, but it's usually
Mike Epps has Louis Vuitton interior in his car that he showed me. Although that I feel like that's aftermarket.
About the same year, I think. What was the big AMC car?
Matador.
They had an Oleg Cassini or something like that.
The big car was the Matador. Yeah. I know because I think the Matador is has my vote for the worst car ever produced. Wow.
Cassini.
How about some props for getting the Matador? Oleg Cassini, famous designer. Boy, now we're digging. We're going for a deep cut here. The Matador was a huge, cumbersome car that was a two-door that had no room in the back seat, but yet got horrible mileage. The Matador, well, read what it says up there. Let's see if you can read that, Matt.
What are we looking at here?
Well, the Oleg Cassini. I forgot about Oleg Cassini.
Yeah.
Well, nobody that bought the Matador knew who he was.
Right.
Well, that's a good point.
I don't know who he is.
He's a designer. I mean,
he was very famous out there in the 60s.
Is there a lot of real design in the Matador?
Just read it.
He said, the special Oleg Cassini edition of the Matador Coupe is available for the 1974 to 1975 model years. American Motors had the famous American fashion designer develop a more elegant, luxury-oriented model for the new coupe. I didn't know he was a fashion designer.
Oh, yeah. He was big time.
Cassini was renowned in Hollywood and high society. By the way, those are two good things.
Yeah.
High society for making elegant, ready-to-wear dresses, including those worn by Jacqueline Kennedy. Cassini himself helped promote the car in AMC's advertising.
It was a big deal.
Jackie put him on the map for, you know.
So the women's dress designer did the Matador.
The thing about the Matador, no, it was, and this is what, 70, all right, so this is after the embargo or right around the time of the gas crunch. And we should have learned our lesson, the 74, 75. Here's my point. No car, and it's probably about the time VW's introducing the Rabbit, probably 74, 75 in there. Obviously, cars like the four-door Datsun 510 exist and have existed for quite some time by this point because those cars came around 68, 69, 70 through there. No car was bigger on the outside and smaller on the inside than the Matador, and no car is smaller on the outside and bigger on the inside than a four-door Rabbit or four-door 510.
Right.
This is the direction we should have been going, which is you can put four adults in a 510, get 35 miles to the gallon, and motor all day in that thing. This was the Matador, hard pressed to get in the back seat. It was a two door, but it was a massive, just lumbersome, cumbersome, unwieldy two door. One of the biggest, and you know, you can say what you want about the Pontiac Aztec and other things like that. At least with the Pontiac Aztec, you could put six people in it, and it would start, and you could go to Bakersfield and kill yourself.
You could pop a tent and live in it.
But you could live in it. This was just a pile. I have, Scott, I don't know which you have, but
this whole time, Scott's been collecting Matadors. He's got seven of them at home.
Oh, my God. This is so uncomfortable. His father worked on the initial design. This in my pantheon of piece of shit cars, this is at the top.
Yeah, my mother's maiden name is Matador.
Oh, no. I am so sorry. Show me another Matador. I'm telling you. So what do you have? Matt, what do you have? You don't know about the Matador.
His middle name is Ador, though. Matt Ador.
Matador.
No. The Matador is not really on my radar. And to be fair, it came out before I was born.
What did they have powering that bad boy? It must have been a V8. It must have been some sort of weird American Motors, like 231 with a single barreled something.
Yeah, 3.8. Inline sixes, a bunch of inline sixes, although the Mexican Matadors had inline sixes.
A 304, 360, a 401. I'll bet you the one with
6.6 liter V8 in a Matador.
I'll bet you that bad boy had under 150 horsepower.
Inline six, 100 horsepower.
All right.
What was the eight?
We
got to
find
eight,
out what the big eight had, or any of the eights had. Three-speed automatic.
You can get a four-speed manual in 71 only, though.
Oh, my God.
That's the rare one. That's the one you want.
0 to 60 on that 3.8 straight six
it's
had
a day.
To be at least a day with the rolling start.
All right. So see if you can find the V8 horsepower. But I know that Scott has a bunch of hot rods. I know
yeah, Scott,
that.
What do you...
And you drive them across, like it's your thing. You just drive them across the country.
Yeah, well,
all the time.
We look at, you know, any reason we can to get in and drive. You know, we like a bunch of us drive to the SEMA show every year. You know, some guys who are hot rod builders and other manufacturers. We've guy named Posey, who's a hot rod builder out of Hershey, Pennsylvania, who's like been doing this for 50 years. This year is his 50th anniversary. But we do Posey's Driven Dirty Tour, and he and I and Corky Coker and Steve Mole started it doing this back in, let's see, in 06.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so we've done it every year. We drive from the east to Steve Mole. Actually, you know, some of these guys would ship their car to us. Some guys, the guys from Albuquerque, drive up to Cincinnati to meet me, and then we all come back together.
Now, when you say you're doing that, though, you're not doing this in a Range Rover. You're doing this
in hot rods.
And I
drive everything I have, and I've got a pretty eclectic, you know, bunch of cars. But I really like raw, you know, hot cars, you know, something you can shift, something, you know, no air generally, just, you know, hair in the wind kind of stuff.
What's the best ride you have that made that cross country run?
Well, they're all different is the problem. I really enjoy my Roadster, and a lot of people are, you know, like, well, you know, the weather, though, you can only, like out here, you guys like Roadsters because you have all this nice weather to use them in. Mm-hmm. But I've been in some serious weather with my Roadster, and first drive out here to SEMA in it, there's 2 days of rain and three snowstorms.
Wow.
And no top. Yeah, and I don't even have a full windshield. I have like the little Brooklyn's Aero screens on it because it's kind of, it looks like a mid-century, you know, like kind of sports car kind of thing. It's a 32 Roadster that doesn't look like anybody else's for sure. But
so you must
That sounds like a lot of work.
Every trucker that passes you or comes up upon you on the highway must think you're insane when they're sitting up there in that cab and
probably
snowing outside.
Actually, we get a lot of thumbs up and people think it's crazy. But, you know, like I also like motorcycles, you know, so if you got the right clothes on, you can do it.
Sure.
And the thing is that the snow is a little nicer in a Roadster than it is in a motorcycle. So
you could put a helmet on and put some dynamite on the inside. You wouldn't hear a thing.
We produced 210 horsepower.
The big Matador.
Wow.
Whatever it did, I can tell you that the suspension couldn't handle the top speed. I know that.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, Scott has brought us a cool vehicle to go look at. Looks like something else. Obviously, he drove it out here, so he drives the stuff. You can go to www.dynamat.com, D-Y-N-A-M-A-T, dynamat.com. We'll talk about one of our fine sponsors, Pro Flowers, and then we'll go out and see what Scott brung us. Ah, yes, Pro Flowers, forgetting Valentine's Day. That's bad. Probably worse than forgetting her birthday. Let's not screw up, fellas. Let's not get in the doghouse. 100 blooms of love with a free glass vase. Just $19.99. Or you can upgrade and add gourmet chocolates and a teddy bear for just $9.99 more. So under $30, you get the 100 blooms, you get the chocolates, you get the teddy bear. Quick, easy delivery, and they'll do it on Valentine's Day. Guaranteed. Speaking of guarantees, Pro Flowers, guaranteed to last at least 7 days or your money back. So how can you go wrong? But how do you get this deal? Well, there's only one way to get this deal. Go to proflowers.com, click on the blue microphone in the top right corner, and type CarCast. That's right. Support the show. Go to proflowers.com, click the blue microphone, top right corner, type in CarCast. ProFlowers, CarCast. You got it? Now go get it.
So support CarCast. We'd love it. Go to iTunes and give us a good rating, and you can jump over to carcastshow.com and maybe donate a little something-something through that PayPal banner.
We get a lot of good guests.
We'd love that.
Bring in a lot of cool cars, and we do a lot of cool events, and it helps us finance the operation. And going to be signing some Mangria bottles, by the way, if you want to come on out. You can go to CorollaDrinks.com and take a look at that. And we're doing some live podcasts coming up, Buffalo, New York. Also doing a little meets and greets for the Mangria as well, and all that kind of stuff. So what you want to do is you just want to go to AdamCarolla.com and hit live dates, because we're coming to a town near you, and there'll be a Mangria signing at a town near you.
Hit the road a lot. And then check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/carcastshow. Jeff's been loading tons of images and stuff up there. Let us know what you think. I'll jump in and talk with you and answer questions and stuff like that. It'll be good.
All right. Now we'll go see what Scott brought us. Well, Scott Whitaker, what have you brought us?
This is a 32 Ford Coupe, the little Bonneville Chop. It looks like a 60-year-old Bonneville race car, really, you know. But it's actually was built, I built it in 06. It's a brand new Brookville steel body, and a few things here and there to look like we wanted it to for the Bonneville effect.
And salt on the rims. It's got a crazy patina to it that, I don't know, patinas on hot rods are kind of like boob jobs. They've come a long way, and now I can't really tell.
Right.
And
I was looking
at this thing going, what a patina. And then I thought, no, maybe, am I being faked out? Is this really a patina? So what part of it is?
Well, you're not alone, first of all, because when this was first shown, I drove it to SEMA from Cincinnati in Vegas, you know, in 06 after we built it. And we had a lot of experts, you know, all the boys that frequent the Peterson, you know, they walk around it and walk around it. And then they go, where the hell did you find this?
Right.
You know, so that was the best compliment and what I wanted to hear. So, and it looked a lot like this. I mean, it hasn't changed a whole lot. We've added a little bit of road grime and such to it, but it looked like this when we were done with it. So
just started driving it. We just compounded the look to it. Have you driven this one across the country as well?
Oh yeah, yeah. This went
from Cincy to SEMA, man.
Yeah, the first right out of the chute, I had about 5 miles on it. We hadn't really got the thing tested, and it's ran flawlessly.
The name written in the name is worn off, and all the lettering and stuff, the number and everything has been scrubbed off. That's all part of the magic. But inside, it looks like you have a flathead engine in there.
Yep.
Are you fooling me again?
Yeah. Or? No. It's
an LS3.
Well, if you're going to drive it across the country, I don't know, you know.
Yep.
Wow.
Well,
it was built intentionally to make it very dependable. It's not maxed out. In other words, the blower is a little looser than it would be if you were going to be racing.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So everything is
detuned
a little bit. And the guy, Dick Lewis, that built the motor, a friend of mine, you know, he's about 80 years old, and he has been doing flat-headed Fords, you know, ever since he was a teenager. He's the best guy I know out there.
So it's a Ford flathead V8 with a blower on top.
It's an 8BA.
Very old school, everything looking.
Yeah. Very old school.
Looks like a couple
blower.
Of single draft, downdraft carburetors.
A Talmechanica blower with Stromberg 97s. And those
Clive Prue, who makes new Stromberg 97 carburetors over in England now. He actually owns the Stromberg name.
Wow.
Those were I was telling him about this project. He said, I want to get a couple of your carburetors. And he said, I've got just the ones. These were like some of the, if not the first two, very close to the early stage. And there was contamination in the mold, and they came out really dirty, mm-hmm. ugly looking. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't even have to do anything to them. I put them on because they had this really dark look and didn't look like the new ones that he was selling.
And again, you know, it's just the in terms of cars you take cross country, this probably wouldn't crack your top five.
It doesn't seem like it would.
But
and you're saying because it's not, you know, this is something that you built that's not that old. When you see the detail in here, like just this radiator shroud, the fan shroud that you have. Welded it, grind down the welds, no filler, the little pinholes, the cracks. That's all just as a result of building it. That's actually almost intentional because...
Yeah, you have to know where to stop on some things. And then on other things, you have to know how far you can go or add to. You know, like when you start buffing things off, you know, you got it, like this is buffed off because people push here, you know?
Right.
You push here and you know, race car wise, you just don't... handle it as carefully as you would another car.
And where like a deer trail, where would you knock over the branches? Well, that's where the deer would head down to the lake, you know, so you have to go, where would you buff it off? And yeah, if this was a salt flat car, a Bonneville car, and the guys were pushing the thing back into the trailer or wherever to the mm-hmm. starting line, there's where they'd put their hand, and there's where you'd have your wear, which is interesting, but it's like if you're putting patina on your car carpet, you'd put it where the pedals were, and not in the back of the car where no one ever sits.
And you're talking about the fan shroud. It's an interesting thing. The fan shroud, you don't see fan shrouds on a lot of hot rods,
right?
Okay, especially traditional. But by doing the treatment that we did, it actually is something you're interested in looking at. But it's not something that takes away from the car. But it really helps that radiator.
Yeah. And it fits. It fits the look. It makes like it's right.
So for me, for dependability and making it like this flathead, unlike a lot, it I can't even get it up to temperature. Most everybody else has trouble with overheating mm-hmm. and so on. This one won't even get up to temperature because some of the things that we did to make it run cool.
So this thing has a generator, not an alternator.
It's actually an alternator.
And last, I was going to say someone put the guts of an alternator in something that looks like a generator.
If you look, there's no, you can't see the shaft coming through.
Right.
So there's an alternator inside there, and then there's a 6-volt Ford script battery in the back that has a little bitty battery inside it that's a 12-volt.
No details. Too
movie
small.
Movie magic in
so
the car.
So what we have here is about how much horsepower?
This thing's about... maybe 250, 275. It's not. It's respectable.
Doesn't weigh anything.
No,
car.
No.
But you have a super reliable horsepower. I don't know that much about flatheads, but can a flathead be as reliable or even more reliable than a non-flathead?
Yes, it can. The most people who in the past, well, I say a lot of people, have had issues with that because of the idiosyncrasies, especially with the temperature issues, you mm-hmm. know. But there are techniques that you can do to solve those problems. Because obviously when you start trying to get more bore and stroke, you make more heat.
Sure.
And you just have to make sure that you're doing all the things you need to do. There's one thing you'll hardly ever see, and in fact, I only know just me and a couple of guys, that copper tube down there is actually a water bypass
underneath the exhaust
that attaches the back of the case to the front.
Right. Uh-huh.
And
between the exhaust
and you'll you just don't head. See that. And that in a, that alone does a tremendous amount. Guys will try to put water pumps that have more capacity on here, and the problem with flatheads is not it's better if you cut every other impeller off mm-hmm. so that it still flows but doesn't try to flow so fast because mm-hmm. it can't handle it.
So a lot of science here, which is kind of cool. You're taking this almost archaic science and then using a bunch of new science to make the old stuff work like it's like it's new.
Have you applied that to the suspension as well? Is there hidden tricks on the suspension, is it really just what it looks like?
The springs in this are Super Slide springs from Posey's, and which you know he takes stuff that looks totally vintage and stock, you know, and makes them work that much better. You know, with the variable rate issues and the buttons that keep down the friction. This car, you know, like a lot of people have, you know, start to try to use coilovers and hot rods and they don't look good. And they don't necessarily ride better. You know, there's nothing wrong with a leaf spring if it's done properly. And this car rides really nice going down the road.
Speaking of nothing wrong with, then, are there some disc brakes hiding inside of those?
No, actually, I opted to go with drum brakes on this because I am not autocrossing this thing, you know, so if you keep them adjusted, you know, and they work real well. You know, I mean, I, you know, the only thing I could use is maybe ABS.
Sure. Now, the big question is, where's the dynamat? Because there is room. There's plenty of room. So the thing that's kind of cool about the dynamat is you have something. No detail has been overlooked, and so on and so forth. So you go, well, how do you put this? How do you integrate this modern product into it? But the good thing is this product's meant to be hidden.
Well, there's the floorboards. He was saying before that this with the texture on it.
That's a Dynadeck.
Right.
Which is used, we sell a lot for traditional hot rods, vintage sports cars, and as well as Jeeps and trucks. It's pretty getting more and more popular.
You got your Dynamat down here, but this is another layer.
And most of my other cars, there's a lot more care in how the thing is trimmed and looks. But, like, you can see a lot of Dynamat up in the top of the car and Dynaliner, and we just kind of let it happen.
Yeah.
Right. All right, can we fire it up?
Sure.
By the way?
Hung up here.
Yeah. It's... this kind of expense and this kind of time spent on making something look old and beat.
And you can
make sure I don't roll.
From scratch. Absolutely amazing. Wow, what a, you know, it's really...
It fires up and idles well.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I got a Brody knob. Uh-oh. Shift linkage problem?
I'm stuck in between gears. I think.
Well, you can turn it off for now. No.
I love the Brody knob, by the way.
We got it. Ludwig Speed King's accelerator pedal, drum pedal.
Everywhere you look, there's just a treat.
That door closed, by the way. That thing is solid.
Yeah.
Let me move my jump box here.
Just everywhere you look, even to the rear of the car, even in the trunk, the old tools and the fuel. It's like something you carry kerosene in back in the day.
Strap down their own tanks anymore.
Just a really neat accomplishment, and the fact that you're able to take this thing cross country is damn near unbelievable. Scott, let's see. Let's give out the website one more time before we head out. Is it dynamat.com?
Dynamat.com.
Dynamat.com. Scott Whitaker, thanks for bringing us this beautiful piece. Until next time, it's Adam Carolla. For Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, and Scott Whitaker saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.